Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, Monday edition. Welcome back from the weekend. A lot to talk about today. Some weekend terror attacks have the U.S. on alert. California's drought producing toxic algae in California. It's causing some problems. A doctor asks a good question. Was Obamacare designed to fail? We'll see what he has to say. And also, it turns out the U.S. did wire money to Iran, even though they said that they could not do that. Those details have just come out as well. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live, Monday edition on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can also listen to us on the TuneIn app if you'd like to do that. That's a good way to listen to KPCG. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Email us at comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. And it's been an interesting weekend headline-wise. We'll talk about that in a minute. But here locally, a pretty good weekend overall. Mm-hmm. You brought a new contraption with you today that you obtained at the fair.
Yeah, it's a lower back sort of support for a chair, and it can go on any chair, and I got it for $10. So pretty good deal for me right there at the state fair, and then went to a Dodgers baseball playoff game on Saturday night, and we stayed at the Colcord Hotel Saturday night as well. So a lot is going on.
You're a mover and a shaker. You're all over town.
I got a lot of reviews to do over the weekend. Yeah. Of all these different things.
Well, there's one more review for you. This could actually apply to anybody today, September the 19th. I didn't know this was a thing, but it is. Apparently, if you go to Krispy Kreme Donuts today, if you can put on your best pirate accent and growl, saunter up to a Krispy Kreme cashier and ask for some treasure, you'll get one free donut. But if you're more serious about that, for those in full pirate attire, you can pick any three of the following: pirate hat, bandana, eye patch, costume hook, pirate shirt, peg leg, parrot, or pirate knickers. Krispy Kreme will give you a full dozen donuts.
Wow.
So I don't know why that is, but apparently on September the 19th, if you are willing to talk like a pirate or dress like a pirate, you can get a free donut. So I guess pirates like donuts or something.
Is today possibly National Pirate Day? Every day is a holiday now.
It could be. It was news to me. It was breaking news. So for those that like Krispy Kreme donuts, and some do, you can get at least one free one or more if you are content to look like a pirate. If you've got pirate stuff hanging about the house, well, why? That's a good question. But also, you can use it. Now's the time. You can finally use that peg leg you've been storing and the eye patch. And the parrot. So,
and the parrot.
So anyway, I don't know. I suppose somebody will try it. I'm always hesitant because I'm afraid that they won't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm misinformed for some reason. Mm-hmm. I walk in there and start talking like a pirate, and they're like, what are you doing?
At least give them a good laugh, though, because they probably don't experience too many interesting things.
I would probably go up to them and pull somebody aside and say, hey, are you guys doing that pirate thing? Do I have to do that? Or And if they say yeah, then maybe I would get the free donuts.
You could always just go past when the donut light is on and get it for free that way.
Yeah, there's multiple ways to enjoy those donuts, I guess. So it's a pirate donut day. Of course, some NFL football over the weekend. My Packers lost, which is okay. It's one game, second game of the year, so it happens. But this was kind of a funny story. Carson Palmer, he is the quarterback there for the Arizona Cardinals. He lost a bet, so he had to wear a hilariously awful costume in warmups. The Arizona Cardinals, in an effort to, I think, keep things kind of light, they have a competition in practice in which quarterbacks and sometimes other players, they lob passes into a garbage can and just to test their accuracy. But if you lose, then you have to wear a ridiculous outfit picked by the other members of the team that are doing this and wear it in warm-ups. Somebody last year had to wear a full elf costume. So yesterday, Carson Palmer, which he shouldn't lose because he's the starting quarterback, but
that is strange. Who won? Does it say?
I don't know who won this one, but Carson Palmer lost. And so yesterday he came out for warm-ups in a full Stay Puft Marshmallow Man outfit from that movie Ghostbusters, you remember? There's pictures on the internet. He's in the full costume.
He probably got beaten by a defensive lineman, too. threw a 50-yard pass into a bucket down the field.
Got lucky. It made him – so he had to wear this outfit yesterday. So there's pictures on the internet of him doing that. But he came out and played well, so maybe he's starting a new tradition.
Well, that's not good for the Bills because that's who they play next week. 40-7 win for the Cardinals yesterday, and now the Bills play them next. The Bills must have the hardest schedule I've ever seen this year. It's ridiculous.
Well, when you lose every game, it feels that
way.
They
might not win a single one because I'm looking down there on their schedule, and they still have to play the Seahawks and the Cardinals and the Bengals and the Steelers and the Patriots twice, again.
You never want to be in that situation where 8 games into the year, the headlines are like, can they set the record for futility? Will they ever win again? But then teams usually pull one out at the end somehow. When they have nothing to play for anymore, it seems like a lot of teams relax, and then they play better and they win.
Pressure's off.
You know, and they'll have that like 4-game winning streak to end the season. Everyone's like, oh, they're on the rise, and then nah.
Pressure's back, and they fail again the next year.
It's tough. It's a tough deal. We have an interesting story later about some things going on in the NFL there. There is actually a report came out by a former player that says he used to play high on drugs, and most of them do, he said. Marijuana specifically. So kind of interesting write-up. We'll get to that if we have time later. The big headlines over the weekend, of course, were these terror attacks that happened, I guess, 3, although there were more explosives, but just 3 that 2 bombs that went off, those pressure cooker type bombs, and then the stabbing in Minnesota at a mall. And so that all kind of happened rapid fire Saturday night, late Saturday night. And I remember checking the headlines just before I went to bed, and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, things are happening. Earlier in the day, the one had gone off at that New Jersey run. Didn't hurt anybody, but then the big one went off in Manhattan, or somewhere in New York, I think it was Manhattan, and injured about 30, 29 or something. No deaths as far as I know. Than the stabbing in the Minnesota Mall. So the officials today are going after a suspect in the New York, New Jersey bombings, 28-year-old Ahmed Khan Rahami. So they're looking for him. At this time, there's no update as to whether or not, you know, what progress they're making, but that's what they're looking for, and there's pictures on all the different websites.
Well, clearly he's a blue-blooded American with that kind of a name.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the first headline that I saw about it, beyond that just that it had happened, was that the mayor came out and said it's not international terrorism. So how are they defining international terrorism? I mean, that's kind of the issue there. And then the one in Minnesota, the ISIS claimed responsibility for it. So now whether that's just talk or they really were behind it, who knows? But it kind of is semantics at this point. Terrorism is happening, and it's scaring people, obviously, because these are soft targets now. You're just shopping at the mall. Somebody pulls a knife. You're just minding your own business in your apartment. Something blows up. I mean, it's making people nervous, and I think rightfully so.
Yeah, even just on Saturday night, I was walking the streets of downtown Oklahoma City, and the game ended late, so it was close to midnight. And I was thinking about all these different things that have happened on the world scene recently with all these terrorist attacks. And I was just kind of looking at the people on the street. I wasn't too worried about anything happening, but it is always in the back of my mind now with all these things going on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you don't want to be paranoid, but you do think about it. I mean, you walk through any place and you don't know the people there and they don't know you. And, you know, so but that's the nature of terrorism. And they talked about that in the Trumpet Hour a couple of weeks ago, I think. It's just that's the goal of it, you know. It's to make people scared. And you don't know where these things are going to happen. You know, they're making pressure cooker bombs. I mean, it's just stuff that they can kind of put anywhere, and you can have some problems. So that was the big stories over the weekend. And there'll be more about that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. But so it's kind of an ongoing investigation. And I'm sure there'll be more news about it. Here's an interesting story out of California. They've had drought for the last at least 5 years, and they've had a lot of problems because of it. Here's a particular problem. Toxic algae troubles many California lakes and waterways. And they said there was an example of this lady whose dog had gone and drank out of one of these lakes and died a few hours later. So they said it was a stark early example of California's growing problems with cyanobacteria, a naturally occurring substance that has blossomed like a slimy weed to infect more than 40 lakes and waterways stretching from Berkeley, San Jose, Discovery Bay, the Russian River, and Redding to Los Angeles. It is the highest count ever and double the 22 reported last year, according to officials. Many people and water agencies have been caught off guard by the growing extent of the algae, which can cause gastrointestinal upsets, skin rashes, allergic reactions in people, and sickness or death among dogs, livestock, sea otters, and other wildlife. And the five-year drought has created ideal conditions for brewing toxic levels of this naturally occurring bacteria. So if it's green water, it's looks bad. Stay out of it, I guess.
Right. Hopefully that's the dead giveaway there, is if it looks green, don't drink it, and that it's not in some crystal clear water either.
Yeah, it's a bluish green algae, so I think something to, they have to be careful for out there. I never would have thought of drought as being a cause of that necessarily, but I guess it is. And it's just another one of those just kind of a plagues that comes from something like that. Mm-hmm. You think of a lack of water, but the water that's there becomes stagnant, I guess, and it allows this, the heat and everything allows this this bacteria to grow, and it's causing all these problems. So
right, the pool of water, I think when it gets more shallow, maybe the sun gets to it more and allows basically bacteria to breed very rapidly. So I can kind of see how that might happen, and especially like you said, if the water is stagnant, it's not moving around, and it's affected more by the heat, then here comes all this bacteria too.
Yeah, they see the hot temperatures, low water flows, and of course that stagnant water choked with fertilizers and other things. So causing some problems out there in California. Here's another story. This is on the other coast in Florida. They have some problems there too. Three surfers bitten by sharks at a Florida beach. Sharks bit three different surfers Sunday in the span of a few hours at the same Florida beach, officials said. The lifeguards told Fox 35 the first incident involving a 43-year-old man happened around 10:43 a.m. when he was surfing and he was bit on the lower leg at New Smyrna Beach. He was then transported to the hospital. That'd be surreal. You're surfing along and shark bites you on the leg. Seems like a movie.
Yeah, it does. Everyone wants to move to places like California and Florida, and look what's happening in both of those places right now. I might just want to stay here in Oklahoma and bunker down in a tornado shelter over the summer months.
There's one thing I can honestly say about sharks that I know, that I've never been bit by one while surfing in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
So that's not been a problem. I have seen
safe surfing here in Oklahoma.
Safe surfing.
So come on out.
And no surfing as well.
But you blew it.
I have seen a shark in Oklahoma at the aquarium, so I have seen one, but he was behind glass and not as big as I had hoped. I was excited because they said, oh, they have sharks there, but they weren't the real huge ones. They were just I don't know what they were, 10 feet maybe not even that.
I caught a baby hammerhead shark actually when I was down in the Gulf of Mexico.
Really?
Next to Florida years ago. I probably was 10 years old.
Wow.
Was not fishing for sharks, but that bit on. We had these huge shrimp as our bait, and apparently that attracts baby hammerheads.
And what'd you do? Just throw back in? Or
it was lashing around and trying to get off the hook, which would have then put it in the boat with us. So yeah, we sort of just held the fishing pole out over the water, and I think we just snipped the line right there.
Wow. You didn't get a picture, I bet.
Probably not. I think we were just making sure it didn't get to us.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, kind of a neat story. They're neat to see. I mean, they're beautiful animals, and a lot of they're very interesting to look at, but obviously dangerous as well. So this guy got bit, 43-year-old man. Then less than 30 minutes later, a 36-year-old man from Miami was bit on both hands while surfing and suffered significant lacerations. He was taken to the hospital. The third attack took place around 1 p.m. when a 16-year-old was surfing and bit on the inner thigh. Ouch. Officials told Fox 35 that all three bites took place near the jetties at New Smyrna Beach.
Wow.
So I'm sure they probably closed it down and got everybody out of there, I would think. I'm thinking of Jaws. That's everybody running out of the water and screaming.
That's one of those things I wonder why it doesn't happen more often. Whenever you have these beaches that are packed with thousands of people and a lot of them are venturing out pretty deep into the ocean, you would think that would be a shark's paradise, but it doesn't happen as much as it obviously could.
Yeah, they didn't really say here from what I saw with if it was the same shark or not. Kind of seems like maybe it would be, but I don't. They don't didn't say. So anyway, kind of a interesting situation there. Like you said, people love to go to those beaches; they're great. But sometimes you have things happen, like sharks or algae or whatever. And I think Florida's had some algae problems, or was it algae or something in the water that was causing problems as well. So
jellyfish, eels, stingrays, a lot of things that could get you in the ocean. Yeah. So come to Oklahoma. We have safe oceans here.
No problems with the oceans here. Here's a really interesting write-up. This is from The Hill. And we talked about Obamacare the other day, and there's just problems with it. Here's the headline. A doctor asks, was Obamacare designed to fail? And they say, as Obamacare's troubles mount, this doctor says, I've heard many patients and my peers in healthcare ask, how could the law's authors not have seen this coming? He said, for my part, I think a different question needs to be asked. What if they did? What if Obamacare was purposely designed to fail? He says, then again, that may, you know, have always been the plan for it to fail. It now seems to me that Obamacare's creators weren't blind to what they were doing. They were playing a long game that is just now coming to fruition. He said, to understand what I mean, it's worth revisiting what happened immediately before Obamacare's passage in 2010. Back then, President Obama and Democrats in Congress wanted to fundamentally revolutionize health care. There were calls for a single-payer system modeled after Canada or European nations. Short of that, there were calls for a public option, a government-run, taxpayer-backed insurance scheme that would run private insurers out of business. The list of radical reforms goes on. And so I think we all remember back to when that was a big debate and people had different opinions on it. They said they got Obamacare instead. The American people's opposition to extreme reform ensured that congressional Democrats backed down from anything extreme. Instead of single payer or the public option, they got healthcare.gov. We know it says how that worked out. 6 years and millions of canceled plans, smaller networks, and higher premiums, deductibles, and copays later, the law is crumbling from coast to coast, which is true. He says, but liberals never backed down from the radical healthcare dreams that were dashed by the American people in 2010. They simply needed to buy their time and lay the groundwork. A couple more paragraphs here. He says, that's why they rushed to pass Obamacare with so little debate and without a single Republican vote. Its authors purposely designed the law so that it would fail, according to this doctor again. He says, and when it did, they could return to the American people with the promise that even greater government intervention in health care could end the Obamacare nightmare. You know, hey, it's really bad. Let's get in there and fix it and take it to the next level. That's what he thinks is going to happen.
Let's fix it even worse than we already have.
Yeah, exactly. He says, look at what's happening now. He says, in the past 6 months, Democrats have renewed their calls for single payer, the public option, and a host of other government-driven solutions to health care. President Obama himself is on board with this push, writing recently that it's time to revisit the debate over health care that he spearheaded in 2009-2010. His call for further serious reforms have been echoed by hundreds of prominent politicians, journalists, and others. And he says this, which leads us to Hillary Clinton. If elected president, she will undoubtedly make these dreams a reality. It doesn't matter whether she has 4 or 8 years in office. I don't know if she's make it eight. those years will see the federal government exert ever more control over America's healthcare system, if not take over completely. And then finally, he says, but the American people should be terrified. If Obamacare has proven anything, it's that government control of healthcare, even partially, has disastrous effects on cost, quality, and individual well-being. Even greater control will cause even greater harm. The liberal cure would be worse than the disease. So it's pretty interesting. That's this doctor's take on it anyway.
And they would probably never admit that they designed it to fail. One of our local sportscasters actually talks about a truth serum all the time, especially whenever you hear a coach not really telling his true thoughts after a game. But what if you gave the truth serum to these lawmakers who passed it without letting anyone read it, basically forced it through without a single Republican vote.
Yeah.
It all just seems so suspicious, but we're not hearing their thought process behind it.
Yeah, and he highlights Nancy Pelosi's infamous remark about, well, we've got to pass it to know what's in it, which is insanity. No one would ever do that unless, of course, either you already knew what's in it and you don't want other people to know, or it doesn't really matter because it's just going to fail so we can get our next thing in. So that's either side of that there is a potential situation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And I think with Hillary Clinton, I think that was one of her big things over the years. She wanted to reform healthcare. That was kind of one of her big goals and dreams. And it's failing everywhere. And it's always so interesting to me how, like, say, the websites just continually crashed. Almost like they hired people that weren't good at it, or they purposefully designed it to not work. Because things are made that work all the time. You don't have problems like that in certain sectors. You know, who releases a website and then just has it, you know, crash all the time, unless you just really don't know what you're doing. It just seemed a little too, I don't know. Like, again, either they hired people that didn't know what they were doing, or it was kind of an intentional thing just to make it collapse and make it fail.
And if people do find out that this whole thing was supposed to fail the entire time, the millions of people who have paid thousands of dollars unnecessarily into one of these bogus plans, they'll be very upset, because then they'll know it was actually intentional, not just a mistake.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time we live in. Just if you look at a lot of things that are happening, we've got a story here in a little bit that you're going to talk about more about these U.S. wire payments to Iran the truth of that just came out over the weekend. But it's just lies everywhere you look. Just lies, lies, lies. It'd be refreshing to hear somebody just tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, I think if somebody did, they wouldn't be successful in running for public office, because inevitably they'd offend some group, or the reality of things would be too much for people to take. If somebody came out and really talked about the reality of unemployment, the reality of the economic system here in the U.S. and the debt, it would really bother people, and people don't want to hear that, I don't think.
Right. I think most of the American people usually mock politicians for being untruthful, but really, if they wanted truthful politicians so much, then I think more of them would exist. If politicians were out there who told the truth 100% of the time, wouldn't the American people choose them, or wouldn't they exist because the American people wanted them? Clearly, we want to hear nice things, and we want to hear what we want to hear, and not what is actually the truth.
Yeah, it's a symptom of the people more than anything. So some of the headlines going on today, really a lot going on, and those are just some of the, just a tip of the iceberg. Make sure you check out thetrumpet.com for other news stories and more in-depth pieces and features on some of those topics. Key of David program's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is The Mystery of the Ages, which highlights that book, which is a free book that you can order and from thetrumpet.com, or you could read it right there at the site or download it. There's a variety of options, and written by Herbert W. Armstrong. Extremely popular book, gone out to millions of people, and it goes through seven major mysteries of your Bible and puts the pieces together. The Bible is equated to like a jigsaw puzzle. And Mystery of the Ages puts those pieces together for you so you can see the whole picture. Very important book. So that Key of David program on the Mystery of the Ages is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talks about some of the headlines over the weekend as well, the weekend terrorist attacks. Again, it's kind of an evolving story. We don't know everything about it, of course, and everyone's scrambling to downplay it, to downplay the Islamic element, to downplay the terrorist element, and boy, the spin machine is in high gear trying to make it look better than it is.
Right. We have a great article on the front page of the Trumpet right now called The Islamic State of Mind, and it talks about what exactly would happen if we did crush all these radical Islamist groups. Would that really stop the terrorism that we're seeing in so many of our big American cities or even across the world? It really wouldn't. They're never defeated. Their will to fight is never quenched. So we're just going to keep seeing more attacks like this because they have an ideology that just can't be stopped.
Yeah, and it's interesting, even in the headlines today, there's a couple of different headlines. One of them is Iran is pressuring President Obama to let them go out and buy a lot of passenger planes. And then there's another headline where Iran is saying to its own people, we must never, you know, stop fighting the U.S. We must never give in to the Satan. you know, it's just baffling. We were talking before we came on the air about one of those other stories. I think the president was at a some sort of a fundraiser or something. He was talking to his own. He was preaching to the choir, as they say. And he started bragging about the Iran deal. And nobody applauded. he either doesn't care or he miscalculated. But nobody thinks that's a good deal on either side.
These were his own donors, too. People who have donated lots of money to support him. And not even they were happy about him giving all this money to Iran and giving them all these favors.
There was they had like a list of some of the Twitter comments about it, and some of them were pretty funny. They were talking how I should have written them down because I can't remember them all, but making references to the donors bringing pallets of money for him and different things like that, you know, referencing that Iran deal. So anyway, yeah, people aren't happy with it, obviously, because anybody can see that Iran hates America. They say it all the time. Are they kidding? Is it like just a big joke or something? And yet, you know, well, and another one of the Twitter responders said, yeah, people don't typically applaud when you hand someone a loaded gun that wants to kill you.
Right.
And I thought, well, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So pretty interesting. We'll talk more about that, what's going on with Iran and the U.S. here in just a bit. But then also on the Trump Daily Radio Show today, a lot of time was spent on what's going on in Europe. Of course, we pay attention to the U.S. a lot because that's where a lot of our listeners are and where we are. But there's a lot going on around the world. It's very important. Europe's very important, and Europe's calling for a unified military. And the U.S. has so many of its own problems now. You can almost sense that the media and others and the politicians are like, yeah, you guys worry about yourselves. We've got our own problems. But the last time Europe had a unified military, it spilled out to the entire world. It was World War II.
Yeah, when was the last time both major American presidential candidates were totally fine with Europe going their own way? Now, we don't have a candidate in favor of controlling that part of the world. It seems like we've totally forgotten what happened last time Europe was in charge of itself. It's pretty dangerous to just forget about history.
Yeah, for sure. So really interesting program today, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And if you can't catch it live or one of the replays, you can always get the archives at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, take another look at this Iran situation and the wire payments that the U.S. has sent to them. We'll do that next here on Trump Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. And did you know how many composers were originally supposed to be lawyers? In our next episode, we will explore this odd thread woven through the tapestry of music history. To supplement this discussion, we have a fascinating Sounds of Scripture segment about the musician's role in administering some of the temple business. And in an eye-opening classroom corner, we will see how music education actually prepares the student for non-musical careers and shows some famous examples. Don't miss this intriguing episode on lawyer-turned-composer on the next Music for Life, titled Passing the Bar.
You can hear Music for Life this Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here, 101.3 KPCG in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area. Online at kpcg.fm as well. Trumpet Radio Live with Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon. And a good reminder there for Music for Life coming up. That's one of the programs here on KPCG as well. And also Mondays is just the best literature. There's typically a new episode. There is one today as well, the final episode on Hamlet. So lots to sink your teeth into today, musically, poetically, headlinally.
Just all you need to be well-rounded.
Grammatically, as I use incorrect words. So, Grant, interesting story here from over the weekend. U.S. wire payments to Iran undercut Obama. When the original situation happened with pallets and pallets of cash being sent to Iran, At the exact same time that we had some hostages released, interestingly enough, how that worked out. One of the things that the administration came out and said was we had to send them pallets of money because we follow the law which says that we can't have wire transfers to Iran. That was the excuse that was used. Turns out before that pallet of cash transaction occurred, two wire payments had been sent to Iran already.
Yes, that's right. So this totally contradicts what President Obama initially said about this. He was talking about how, well, we had to send them cash because our sanctions against them are so strict and we uphold every bit of the sanctions, which would preclude us from making wire payments. But the thing is, back in July 2015 and then again this year, April 2016, they did send wire transfers to Iran. One of them was for $848,000 to settle a claim over architectural drawings and fossils now housed in the Tehran Museum of Contemporary Art.
I just have to interject. What? Come on now.
I don't know what
architectural
that even
means. Drawings.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Now maybe it's a real thing. I don't know, but it seems like they're trying to build a weapon to destroy us, and we're paying them for some sort of a drawing they made.
I don't know what it means. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. I couldn't let that one sit.
No, that's a great point. I don't really know what this claim means. It seems like they're just making up different arenas in which to give Iran more money.
Yeah.
Because what is the relevancy of architectural drawings and fossils right now? Then April 2016, a little bit of a bigger payment, $9 million to remove 32 metric tons of Iran's heavy water. And that heavy water is used to produce plutonium, which then you can use in nuclear weapons.
Right. And then, yeah, anyway.
We had to take it away from them, though, and we had to pay them $9 million to do it.
To do it, yeah. Well, so, but the thing about this is that, like you said there in the beginning, they had said that they didn't do this. So they're caught in just an absolute lie. But they're still trying to work their way out of it somehow, from what I could tell.
Yes, it's a bit strange. One of the Obama spokesmen actually then defended what Mr. Obama said. He said, we do not have a direct banking relationship with Iran, which means that we cannot wire money directly to Iran.
Except for the two times that they did.
Exactly. That's why this is quite strange. He did not directly address either of these wire transfers that we've been talking about, even though those were already known at the time he made the statement.
It almost leaves you speechless. I mean, they clearly got caught in a lie here. And yet still won't admit to the fact that they did. They just keep spinning another story about something. And so then it's from what I saw about this as well, is that one of the reasons Iran asked for that pallet was that it was just too inconvenient for the wire transfer. Like it was hard to get it. Yeah. That's what at least some people were saying.
Yes.
So they've been having dealings. I mean, this has been going on for a while anyway.
Yeah, the reasons that they wanted money instead of wire transfers was because they could get the money more quickly that way, and whatever they spent the money on, you couldn't really trace it as easily if you just had cash.
Right.
Wire transfer, you can see if it's going to Russia or wherever else, apparently. I don't know much about it, but that's what I was reading about it.
You haven't spent a lot of time dealing in international wire transfers?
I haven't spent much time dealing in the lies of this administration, I guess.
The terror network. We should ask our employers if we can get paid in pallets of cash. Can I get paid in a pallet of cash, please?
Like a bunch of $1 bills. Yes. maybe stacked an inch high.
Different currencies. Unmarked.
So much money. That's how we would get so much money.
It would look like a lot. Yeah, but it was singles, yeah, for sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's interesting. Republicans in Congress, obviously, were outraged by this. And they were just pointing out that it could easily fund terrorism because you can't really find where cash would go. And also recalling that the money was foreign currency to skirt around some of the restrictions as well. So it really does seem like some sort of a midnight mobster deal.
I just racking my brain here trying to think about some time in history where a nation that actually has the upper hand has paid money to an avowed enemy that wants to destroy them. Like I, maybe it's happened, but I can't, off the top of my head, think of anything like this. It's like too strange to even be real, but yet it is.
Mm-hmm.
Makes no sense on any level.
Right, and then the highly publicized $1.7 billion payment that they made to Iran recently, or that they're still making to Iran, I'm not sure. I believe it's already been paid, but that was based on an arms deal that fell through in the 1970s, which when I first read that months ago before they paid it, I thought that it was a parody headline.
Right.
Really, we're going to pay something that for something that happened almost 50 years ago, 40 years ago?
Right. Well, that then it was one-upped by the great architectural drawing and fossil repayment.
Apparently.
That had to happen. Fossils? You know, and we don't even have these? They have them? Why are we paying them?
It's like, really confusing.
I'm actually curious. I would probably, even though it's not really relevant, like what architectural drawings did they do? Or did we? Like, I don't understand. And what fossils?
Well, that's true, because Iran has the fossils and the drawings, but we still gave them money for them. So what did we actually gain in this situation?
I don't know.
They didn't give us the fossils and the drawings even. Those are still in their own museums.
Well, there's a lot of times where it seems like the government probably does owe some money to somebody, and I don't think they do much about it. But when it comes to Iran, somehow they have like a perfectly kept list of all the money they've owed them for the last 30 years. And they're just ticking it off. Oh, that makes sure we get them that $800,000 for those drawings. Come on. This can't be legitimate.
Right. And I heard yesterday that under Hillary Clinton, the secretary or the State Department of the United States lost $6 billion. They have no idea where that money went. But when it comes to Iran, we know everything about every reparation that must be paid from now until hundreds of years in the future, possibly.
Well, somebody made a really good comment about the story. They said, well, has Iran paid us back for, and then they listed off all the terror attacks that they've committed against us. Have they paid for those? Have they paid the families of those people?
No.
It's yeah, of course not. And so this is just, I don't know. It's almost like whoever's drawing up these fictitious narratives is taking pleasure in seeing like how silly they can make them.
Mm-hmm.
Architectural drawings? Like fossils? What next, pottery?
Well, the thing is, like we were saying, we didn't even get anything back from what I could understand about this. So really, it's like, how could you just write something down and say, this is what we're giving you the money for?
Great, yeah.
Don't you have to get something back at some point?
The great architectural drawings. Maybe the drawings were for Hillary Clinton's security tent. The top secret tent.
Here's how to reinforce that, since apparently it wasn't working out so well.
I don't know. It's just a weird explanation for it. But again, the bigger issue is that they said that they couldn't make wire payments. That's why they gave them a pallet of cash. Turns out they made two wire payments previously.
Yes. So. And I thought this was also interesting because Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, a representative from Oklahoma, actually discovered these two wire transfers in briefings with Obama administration officials. So apparently he was able to nag it out of the officials that this actually happened. But then he said they announced pretty quickly afterward, that being Iran, that they were expanding their defense and their military budget by $1.7 billion, an exact amount that we had just sent over to them.
Wow.
So that just shows you why them getting the money in cash was beneficial, because they were able to use it right away instead of a wire transfer
that
could possibly be frozen as well as tracked.
Yeah.
So he really did sniff out exactly how Iran could benefit from more cash payments in the future, even though clearly wire transfers are possible.
That's amazing. It's not good enough for them to get money from us because it's too slow. They need pallets of cash. They can immediately fund the terrorism as soon as possible. We wouldn't want to delay that at all. You know, the other thing, too, is this is just another example of when nothing would have been said about this unless it was discovered.
Right.
You know, if it was no big deal and you had nothing to hide, why don't you tell everybody? Well, it's no big deal once people already know, and then they act like, oh, yeah. But that's happened countless times where they didn't say they had done it. They got caught doing it, and then, oh, yeah, no big deal. Just architectural drawings.
Well, they also claimed after the $400 million plane flight that they had told us months ago that this has happened, and everyone's thinking, well, we don't remember anything about this being said at all.
Yeah.
So then they even try to say that, oh, we did tell you, so it's not a big deal at all. How did you tell someone when no one remembers you saying a thing about it?
Yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable. But yeah, if no one, if people are willing to just let it happen, then, well, there it goes. Really interesting. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of this situation. That's up from Politico. You can read the rest of that. U.S. wire payments to Iran undercut Obama. Pretty serious issue there, but yet it just kind of just sails on like the rest of them.
Just a side point, too, that Senator James Lankford, he's been to Armstrong Auditorium a couple times, and he talked to a lot of the students here in depth about just, you know, dealing with the Obama administration even, and how there was one point where they were negotiating about a certain issue and it was going really well. And then Mr. Obama came in and said, okay, we're not negotiating anymore. It's my way or the highway. So you can get out of here.
Yeah, he had some really interesting insights about some of the inner workings. So it's pretty interesting. Again, you can read the rest of that right up at Politico there. Kind of interesting note from over the weekend. You remember Liesl from The Sound of Music? She died at 73, wow. The actress. Miss Carr's family announced she died in Woodland Hills, California, of complications from a rare form of dementia. So I think everyone's familiar with that movie, and she played Liesl on that, and she died at the age of 73. So I thought that'd be kind of an interesting note to pass on. Of course, NFL football is a huge, huge industry here in the United States, and they are in the headlines a lot, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for bad. Here's a story from the New York Post. It says, I played stoned. Some NFL players love getting high before kickoff. Says before he suited up to play against the New York Giants in 2012, Jacksonville Jaguars offensive lineman Eben Britton took an ice bath followed by a hot shower. He did his routine stretches, and then he smoked marijuana. In fact, Britton, who also played for the Chicago Bears but left the league in 2014, tells the Post he played for three NFL games while high on marijuana. He says, NFL games I played stoned were some of the best games I ever played. Cannabis cements your surroundings, he says. A lot of people say they're useless when they smoke marijuana, but he says, I played the NFL games while stoned, dude. That's an exact quote. My performances were solid, and I felt really good after, which was the point, since the Brooklyn-born Briton was smoking to relieve at various times psychological distress or sciatica or pain in his shoulders. So he had some pain he was going through, and he felt physically better when he was on drugs. It says, and he was far from alone. Asked how many NFL players currently smoke marijuana, Britton estimates it's over 50%, and it could be as high as 75%. A sports agent who asked to remain anonymous says the number is rumored to be as high as 80%. There's a growing movement among former and current NFL players calling for the league to lift its ban on marijuana. As the pro football season wraps up week 2, 18 athletes are sidelined for unspecified substance abuse violations, which, says the one sports agent, is almost always marijuana. So it's a major problem in the NFL, in the NBA as well. And, well, problem as I think a lot of people would see it. They don't think it is. They think it's great. They think it should be legalized for them to play.
Well, that's a good point, too, that it actually is illegal at this time. This guy's openly admitting that he cheated. He says that he played better while on it. So if that's true, he's using a performance-enhancing drug. But it would be interesting to go back and see how well he actually did. Maybe he gave up 10 sacks that day. And
he thought he played well.
Constantly snacking on the sidelines. So
yeah, he's not in the league anymore. So it says, nevertheless, players are willing to take their chances with this, the fact that they could be suspended. Marijuana is so prevalent that one former pro tells the Post, quote, I had my marijuana dealer meet me at the players' parking lot after practices for a delivery.
So, wow, that's pretty blatant. That's pretty bold to do that there, because it is illegal.
Yeah.
Not just nationally in most cases, but also especially at your place of work there.
Some doctors are saying they should be allowed to do it. This doctor, Sue Sisley, MD, she recounts a recent example of an NFL patient suffering from a rotator cuff tear that she wound up treating. She said nothing gave him relief, including opioids. He was on the bench because he was non-functional on the field. Side effects from the medicine had him so sedated that it was literally dangerous for him to play. He was frustrated and lost his position and lost credibility. He tried cannabis and actually got back in the game. He is currently playing now. That is a common scenario. So really, if you look at it, they, in a lot of cases, apparently they need this drug to play because they have pain, because they have difficulties. There probably is a better question there. Should they be doing it in the first place? Should they be slamming themselves into each other
right.
in the way that they are? But basically they're saying whatever it takes to get me on the field. I don't want to lose my position. I don't want to lose my job, my money. And so give me whatever gets me back out there. And in some cases, it's marijuana.
Just a terrible life choice, too. It's easy to joke about some of the bad side effects from it. And a lot of movies out there do joke about it, too, and try to glorify it. But it does actually chemically alter the mind. And they think it helps them in the short term, but the long-term effects are pretty devastating.
Did it? Jake Plummer, you might remember him. He quarterbacked the Broncos and the Cardinals before retiring in 2007. Tells the Post that he used pot following the hip surgery that he had from 10 years of taking hits in the NFL. While playing for the Denver Broncos, Nate Jackson used it for the constant aches and pains he endured on the field. Ricky Williams, who is pretty infamous for this, retired in 2011 as a running back with the Baltimore Ravens, has talked about smoking up after separating his shoulder during Monday Night Football game with the Dolphins in 2003. Buffalo Bills offensive tackle Chantrell Henderson.
Oh, Chantrell.
Chantrell.
He's on a 4-game suspension right now.
Oh, is he?
Probably that's why.
Chantrell Henderson is currently riding the bench, as they say, for using marijuana to relieve the pain of Crohn's disease. So there's a lot of situations here. Another player, Derek Morgan of the Tennessee Titans, he's a linebacker. He says he doesn't smoke marijuana but is pushing for the league to explore its possibilities, telling the Post that pain, brain trauma, depression, anxiety, those are all things that can be treated well with cannabis. So and as much as I like football, I don't like the injuries that go along with it, and I don't necessarily like the damage done, but the game is a fun game to watch. But more and more, it is like the gladiators. You know, just throw them out there, let them slam into each other, and then give them some drugs so they feel better.
Yeah.
That seems like it doesn't seem like the drug is the solution to the problem.
No, and Ricky Williams was talking about separating his shoulder and needing weed for that. I've separated my shoulder and didn't need that at all, and I got hit after that, not full contact in NFL, but I got tackled a couple of times in a flag football game right after that happened. Shouldn't have been tackled in a flag football game. And it hurt just a little bit, but it's not so excruciating 24/7 that you absolutely need to take an illegal drug for it.
There's a lot of push for these drugs to be legalized. Even there's a story today about a town in California that is kind of springing back to life somewhat because they're selling their land for marijuana to be grown. So they're looking at it, I guess, sort of as a positive. But again, there are other sides to this coin. But there's a lot of examples here of players that have this situation going on. One guy, Nate Jackson, he retired in 2009. He believes that cannabis doesn't just ease pain; it can also give players a leg up. He says, "I became a better athlete from it. Marijuana improved my hand-eye coordination." I don't know about that. He says, being high on cannabis allowed me to see the game on a different level. He probably just was running slower than everybody else. He says, it made me a more creative player. Jackson, whose memoir, Fantasy Man, it sounds like a lot of fantasies, comes out Tuesday, recalls how on his off days he recuperated from the previous game's bruised muscles and banged up bones by relaxing and getting stoned. After one particularly brutal game that ended with a trip to the emergency room for a rib injury, he says, I could not breathe real deeply without pain, but I stayed in bed, smoked marijuana, and healed in just a couple of days so we could get back out there on the field. And he says it also kept him off of the joint-damaging anti-inflammatories and addictive opioids such as OxyContin, which is eaten like candy in the NFL, he says. Players get handed bottles of pills. The Titans' Morgan says he's heard of footballers becoming dependent on the drug. So that does happen. It's happened to a lot of guys. Happened to Brett Favre, the old Packer quarterback. He was addicted to painkillers.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you give an entire bottle to someone in pain and don't monitor their usage. Then you just think that you need it all the time. A lot of this just sounds like manufactured reasons to use a drug or take a painkiller. Like, oh, we need it. There are no other alternatives. We have to take these exact things that are technically illegal in your sport. If you're going to take things that are illegal in your sport, at least don't compete in your sport and be a cheater.
Well, and where does it stop? If you legalize one thing, is that where it ends, or is something else come along that's even more, you know, addictive and has more side effects or whatever? And even there, just as a fan, I mean, I don't know, as a nation, are we comfortable, let's say, watching a game where people are hurting each other and they have to get high on drugs to go back out there? I mean, at some point you have to say, wait a second, this doesn't seem like this is the way we should be entertaining ourselves.
Right.
But so the more that comes out about some of what goes on there on the field, the more eye-opening it is as to what some of these guys are going through. And they're trying to get relief, and they want to play this game, and they're getting paid to do it, and they're taking the drugs to help them. So it's I think it's just there's no good answers there other than stop hitting each other so
stop
hard.
Stop playing that sport, yeah. Or, you know, rugby, even without all the padding and the helmets, actually has fewer injuries or traumatic injuries because they don't hit each other as hard. They don't feel like invincible flying bullets with these helmets that are protecting their heads. Not really protecting their heads, but people feel invincible when they're wearing the helmets. If they weren't wearing as much protection, you might think that they would be a little bit more smart about how hard they hit.
Well, and the guys have just, they've gotten so much bigger and faster in a way to where, you know, some of these, say if you're a cornerback and you weigh 180 pounds and you've got to come up and run block or, you know, try to stuff the run, and you've got a, you know, 250 or 60 pound tight end coming through there or some running backs even, there's no way you're going to tackle them unless you launch yourself and knock them over.
And they go low. Those little guys go low at the big guy's knees, and that's what causes a lot of knee injuries. So pretty much every aspect of that game is brutal, and it is, obviously, it's entertaining. It's the most popular sport in this nation, but there are a lot of consequences to it, and it should make us wonder if we should be so seriously interested in it.
Well, a lot of things have changed with it, I think, because you do look back over the years, and there have been guys that have played years ago, and they seem to live for quite a while and be okay. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of stories there as well. I don't have all the details on what they went through, but I, you know, back in the old leather days, leather helmets, I don't think you dropped your head as much.
Right.
You know, so it is interesting. And the thing is, it makes so much money. It is such a huge money maker that, you know, people want to keep getting paid.
Yeah.
and so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the NFL decides here. I do wonder about, well, I suppose if you play NFL football, the NFL is your employer, so they can dictate whatever the laws are. Because I was thinking about, like, Colorado. I mean, that's, marijuana is legal in Colorado. But working for the NFL, I suppose it's not legal for them.
Yeah.
There's just all these different
conflicting
laws and rules, and yeah.
That's just what happens when men think they know best, and they try to apply different laws in different situations and in different states, but not the same way in different corporations. So it just gets really confusing. But the thing is, no football player is forced to play football. It is a very lucrative choice if you get good enough. But there are also some potentially devastating injuries that come from it. You know, play baseball.
Play baseball.
play basketball. Play a non-contact sport. If you think that you need to get addicted to a painkiller or an illegal drug to offset some of the side effects of playing football.
Yeah, well, even there, I mean, marijuana is very prevalent in a lot of sports.
Yeah.
Ones where they wouldn't, quote unquote, you know, need it for the pain.
But apparently basketball players think they need it too. There's always
addictive.
A reason to take something.
Yeah, it's an addictive situation. So anyway, not a great deal there in the NFL. They just keep having, seems like, scandal after scandal, difficulty after difficulty. And it's kind of interesting right up there from the New York Post. I played stoned. Some NFL players love getting high before kickoff. That's the report anyway. Pretty interesting. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up here in a little bit on KPCG today. Also, Music for Life as well. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.